Is your company growing or is it just getting busier? Every decision you make this week either builds your company's value or burns it down. I'm Norris Avazian, and thank you for tuning into the Service Crucible podcast, where we skip the off-the-shelf solutions and get straight to what works. I started my career running a truck, then led service teams across the country, from mom-and-pop shops to overseeing a 20-company division inside a home services private equity portfolio. This show is where we strip it all down so you can lead with clarity and build something that actually works. Let's go. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Service Crucible podcast. My name is Norris Avazian, founder, CEO of Service Crucible, where we are discussing a variety of topics that is going to just give you common sense, immediate impact action items that you can make a difference with in your business, in your operations, in your culture, with your people. I'm very excited about our guest. His name is Derek Cormier, and he is the owner of Climate Experts Air, Plumbing, and Electric, based out of Melbourne, Florida. Yeah, since 2016 being started, he is pacing for $10.5 million with a stretch goal of $12.5 million. And based off of what I've learned about Derek from him so far, I think he's going to crush that target, hopefully. And he's doing it really, really smart. There is so much that Derek is doing with his team at Climate Experts that just goes back to the basic blocking and tackling, the fundamental truths of our industry, where he's maintaining profitability, he's staying scrappy with his team, and he's delivering results. And if you're out there and you know what his social media reels look like, you're already a big fan like me. Love a guy with a sense of humor. Derek, thank you so much for being on the show, man.
Appreciate having me on.
So let's jump straight into it. I mean, if we didn't start recording, we would have just spent the next 2 hours talking, and there's so much alignment that we already have. So we were discussing, like, one thing that I just immediately want to get out there right now is what you're doing with marketing. It's working for you. It's working very well for you, and it goes against almost every single narrative that people are unnecessarily getting influenced by, in my opinion, not so popular, but popular social media channels. Somebody asked a question about, oh, what should my marketing spend be? What should I spend my money on? And they're getting answers from a mob. And there's some legitimate people out there that give great advice, but let's hear it straight from the horse's mouth. Since 2016, you have grown 50% year over year. You're about to do 10.5, most likely 12 this year. And in all those years of operation, from day one, you've never exceeded 7% budget on your marketing spend.
Correct.
Talk about your blend. What's working? What were some early lessons you learned from that you pivoted away from? Just walk us through that really quick.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest issues that happens when you're smaller and you're starting out is sometimes you trust people you really shouldn't. And especially a large marketing firm that tells you they're going to handle it all and do it well. I think people specialize in what they normally can do really well at. And I'm going to find people that specialize in marketing different areas. So you can be good at PPC, you could be good at social, you'd be good at print mail, mass media. But I'm more concerned of what are you the best at? Because I'm not hiring a marketing agency to handle all of my marketing. That is just putting the full responsibility in someone's hands that can really mess things up. It's going to be so easy for them to exceed that marketing budget. So as an owner, even though you might not want to, you're going to have to learn about marketing. You cannot be illiterate to all of the areas of marketing for a home service business. And I think what happens is we trust people and we just, hey, get us leads. And you don't know how to speak that language. You don't know how to hold them accountable. You need to understand what ROI is on your investment. You need to understand and track these channels. And there's certain things that are harder to track, like branding. But still, you need to have a good plan. So we do a budgeting workshop the year prior to plan how much we want to spend on each marketing category. And then we make campaigns based on that. And then we talk about when we're going to launch those. So we have a plan up front. So we know how to hold our marketing vendors accountable because we're giving them the plan and we're giving them expectations. If you just tell them, hey, I just want more leads, that is not enough expectations. You need to let them know what kind of ROI you want out of that, the type of leads that you're looking for. And then we need to track the results. And I don't think enough contractors do that. I think it's just like, oh, I need leads. And then we're desperate and we're going to the grocery store starving. And then we buy things that we shouldn't have bought. And then it makes us fat. And then we're mad at the grocery store. And it's not the grocery store's fault that you didn't go in there with a logic mind and you didn't do enough research of what you needed to buy. So I think number one, that's one of the issues that contractors have, trusting the wrong person and not educating themselves on something you should be educated on. What we did early on is we took really good care of our customers. We did not lose our customers. It was hard enough to find that customer. I don't want to blanket all of my money on PPC, gambling to hope the right customers come in the door. You could get a lead, and this marketing company could tell you, well, we got you 10 leads. What if nine of those leads were not your customer? They didn't want what you offered. So if you're tracking how many leads that they brought in, that's not a metric that's helpful for you. I'm looking at ROI on investment. I'm looking at, does this person continue to buy from us? Are they a maintenance member with us? Are they using other services? So, and I think that's a lot of the times what's missed is we're just looking at money spent and how many leads brought in. That's not enough. That's not delving down enough to the real numbers of what matters. So I took really good care of my customers and I focused on referrals. I focused on then selling them more services. So I realized early on that you could specialize, but you can also add services that are relatable. So we added in blown-in insulation. We made sure we did ductwork, duct sealing, duct cleaning. Anything involved with HVAC that can get us in the door so that we can prove to that customer we are the right company for them. And as I'm growing, I became a licensed plumbing contractor. This year, we are a licensed electrical contractor. Our main business is still HVAC, but now we're getting in those doors for plumbing and electrical, and now we're owning the home for those other trades as well. And then we get them on a maintenance membership, and anytime something happens, we're back in the door. So realistically, that $19 a month we charge for our maintenance plan, we're not making money on that. Everyone that's like, oh my goodness, you know, those guys that put the $19 or $29 tune-ups are scam artists. They're not scam artists. Those people are smart at marketing. They are getting in the door. Again, if I give my customers a $19 or $29 tune-up to get in the door, that's better than paying $500 to get a lead from PPC that you don't even know is your customer. If I'm remarketing to my customer $29 tune-up, it gets me in the door and I get a $1,500 sale. That's a win for me based on, you know, just unlimited new customer leads that don't even convert.
Where do I even begin? First of all, you're the first person in years to be on point, same page, data point for data point on so many things that I try to scrape out, scream off the top of every mountain that nobody listens to. For context, like towards the end of what you said about really providing exceptional value to your existing membership base, keeping them, retaining them, making sure you're at a net gain in memberships gained every month, tracking that the correct way, because it can be a nightmare through the CRM. Additionally, I was talking to Katie Donovan last week, and we were talking about the relationship. That's what I set the theme of questions around, the relationship between marketing agencies and contractors. What kind of base level knowledge they should commit to knowing about each other to have a successful relationship. And I say this to Katie and whoever's in the marketing world listening to this, I'm not doing this to hurt your feelings, but I have a deeply rooted mistrust and hatred for marketing companies that think that they're going to have all the answers for home service companies.
Same.
And good. And I hope this sentiment spreads. And I'm not spreading hatred. I'm just saying, come prepared. You know, care about the relationship you're about to get into. Learn about each other. You're not just marrying the person, you're marrying the family. So, one of the things that she brought up, like we got a little bit deeper into the conversation. We talked about membership base. And She's like, have you ever thought about how we treat our membership base? We only call them when we need them. We harass them with phone calls, emails, and text messages so they can book. And when the weather picks up and season is in gear, we're just focused on all these new bright shiny toys, which are the new customers, net new customers. And I was like, I've never really thought about it that way. And it makes perfect sense. It sounds like an abusive relationship that I wouldn't want to be in. And
Sure.
so, like, you know, you're using to your success. Anybody that's done this for a little bit of time can tell that you have an exceptional culture in place. Your leadership takes ownership. You guys really embody your core values. And that is, that does ultimately trickle down to the customer and the experience that they have with you. So that is powerful, man. And then really diversifying your spend is the in-between that I really understood from you as well. Absolutely important to do that, to not put your eggs in one basket, understand what their capabilities are, but getting granular with the KPIs. Derek, that's I think there's no excuse for any contractor to not get as granular as you do in your KPIs. Just because there's calls generated doesn't mean crap to me. Most people don't know what a raw booking rate is in their call center. They just look at, oh, we got it 92%. No. Well, what's your raw booking rate?
100%
And
CSRs don't label
yeah.
that accurately. They are going to say
No.
it's spam, it's out of service, so they get a good inbound booking rate. And is your customer service manager diving deep into that? Probably not. They probably don't have the time to. So, and again, if you're getting tons of spam calls, like what's going on? What's the issue there? So, one thing we do for our MVP m members is we have a special phone line just for them where they are getting the
Yes.
priority service. So, and we're giving them a lot of value. Like, we go above and beyond for those members. We make sure that if there's any issues that are happening, we take care of them immediately. And we prioritize that. We have a special Slack channel for MVP member complaints that we are literally on within 5 minutes. You'll see boom, 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 taken care of, and we're out there. So we're really in line operationally to where we focus and prioritize really well. And I think that is one thing that's lacking with 2025 in this generation. There's so much going on. There's just so much social media. There's so much to Google, AI, chat, so many opinions. And then we're not focused. We're not focused. And then we don't prioritize. And then we wonder why it feels like the day just went by. And then we wonder why we feel so overwhelmed. It's because you're not focused. You're paying attention to too many things.
All right. You reminded me of an excerpt from a book, and I'm very sorry I can't remember which book it is, but definitely a business book. Your level of knowledge and understanding and how deep you go into the whole marketing could be, see, Derek, you're not taking a one-dimensional approach to this. You're seeing the interdepartmental overlap and how that is, how strong of a conduit that builds between you and your customer and overall the experience that they have with you and your team. And so what I remember from the book is at the after all of the fame and success in creating one of the largest, highest valued companies in the world, Steve Jobs, love him or hate him, did not let go of two core duties. He did not delegate to anybody else. One was customer experience, conflict resolution, customer service. He would listen to customer complaints. He would go to their homes. He would call them. He would take over phone calls. And if anybody needs a deeper understanding of that, that's relevancy of field. That is direct feedback from your end user who makes or breaks your cash flow, and the people where the rubber meets the road, your technicians. If you're not listening to them and you think, and I don't think that's thinking, but for lack of a better term, you think you know better than the feedback that you can get from the field, me and Derek will be eating popcorn. Very
watching.
true. Very true. The second thing that Steve never let go of was marketing. He was involved in every single aspect of it. The look, the experience, the cost, the blend, the metrics, the ancillary metrics that are connected to the main KPIs that they measured. Retention. Like they would go as far as far like quantifying the retention rate of customers landed in specific campaigns. Why aren't we doing that? So it doesn't matter if you're still in a truck, you're doing 300 a year, you're doing 5, 8, 10, 12, 20, it doesn't matter. The buck's got to stop with you on the marketing side. And Derek, I think you're nailing this, and I think you haven't even started to see how it's going to pay off in dividends for you in the future.
Yeah, I mean, even one area where I know there's a lot of different opinions. So we are in three Home Depot stores here. And a lot of people said, oh, don't waste your time. They charge you a fee. It's a pain in the ass with the paperwork. And I'm like, fine, I'll take your opinions, but I'm going to look and see who's doing it successfully. And I did. I visited several shops that were doing box stores, Costco's, Home Depot's, Lowe's. And they showed me the positive aspects of it. And then they showed me how to mitigate the negative aspects of it. And I made a logical, non-emotional decision to then work with these box stores. And let me tell you, it's amazing because Home Depot is spending millions of dollars to get customers in their store while my lead gens, Climate Experts employees, then sell them tune-ups and free estimates. And we're not really so worried about the economy because people are always going into Home Depots. And I mean, if PPC or Google shuts down, we're still getting leads. You know, if all the, you know, internet shuts down, people are still going into Home Depot, that we're gonna get leads. So, and again, we're gonna keep them under 20% of our business because I don't like anyone owning our business whatsoever. We're not relying on them in any sense, but it does feel nice to know that you've got some stability in different areas to rely on. Like I said, we've got social, we've got branding, we've got PPC, Google Local, we've got print mail. You know, we've got partners with other contractors. We've got Home Depot. So we're not really scared when people are on social media like boasting, oh no, what if ChatGPT takes over? We've already got a plan for that. What if, you know, what? So we've already, I'm a strategy-minded person. I'm always thinking 6 steps ahead. So, you know, when I go into a room and an issue happens, I'm calm. I don't freak out. I'm not one of those guys where someone comes to me with an issue and I match their energy. I'm actually weirdly calm and they think there's something wrong with me. Like our roof flooded at our building. We have a like an 8,000 square foot building and the roofers came and they did it during it was a storm pouring and it was pretty ridiculous, but we flooded the whole place and everyone's freaking out. Like this is, and I'm just sitting there with a smile on my face because I know what I'm going to get from them money wise on that claim. And I'm thinking all of the things I could do with it. And guess what I got? I got a lot of money from it. And the place is much nicer than it was. So I'm an opportunist. I do not jump into the fear mentality. I don't trust people. I ask a lot of questions and then I use that information to my advantage to move forward.
This is a perfect segue into culture. Just based off of everything that you've talked about so far and what I've learned from you, there's no way you take 100% credit for what you've done and accomplished so far.
I try not to honestly involve my name in anything. I don't walk around and boost myself as the CEO. I'm one of them, and they know that. I treat everybody as an equal. I don't demand respect. I lead by example. I'm one of the team, so I'm a small part of where we're at today because of the great people that we have. And that's the only way that I want it. Because I don't want to work for a place where everyone's super reliant on me. Like, I want to work with some rock stars that it's more fun to work on a solid team than, you know, you're dragging everyone behind you to get to a place where they don't even want to go. So it's how we are.
How do I say this? You're the exception, not the rule. one of the biggest challenges for companies to scale, you know, like a really, really big challenge is getting from 5 to 10, but it is a hump to get from 10 to 15, and breaking 20 is a task and a half. Completely different makeup of the company altogether. People, I believe, is the number one ingredient. And where you're the exception and not the rule, in my opinion, is that there's so many things that are happening organically because of what you're bringing to the table, what your value system and belief system is. And pacing at 10 and a half this year, I foresee that it is going to be effortless for you to expand into different territories through M&A activity because you've got a hell of a bench depth set up and the culture doesn't die with you anymore. Most people don't accomplish that ever, ever. Even with eight-figure exits, they haven't accomplished that.
Agreed.
And so talk to me, like, you know, Derek, there's a lot involved in this. It's not just the culture and the values and the pride of ownership. I mean, for crying out loud, some of your reels, when I first started watching them, I didn't know who the owner of the company was.
That's the way I make them. If I go out into the field with the techs, I don't ever say that I'm an owner, I'm a tech. And they laugh. I'll even ask for reviews. I'm like, yeah, my manager would, be really proud of me if I got a 5-star review. And I'm out there in the field. They're laughing. And they're like, ha ha, yeah, you're the CEO. And they keep it going. But I share the wealth accordingly. I'm not a greedy person that takes everything for myself because I'm patient. I know long term, I will win if my team wins. I want us all to win. I want everyone at this company to succeed. And yeah, depending on your role, you will make more money. That's just obvious. Salespeople will make the most money. Managers might make a little bit more than somebody else, but my salespeople make more money than my managers
As they
because
should.
they're producing. So again, like I think we work at these places to where there's like these like insiders club of managers and they build this wall, from management, professional management with their people. And I think that's the issue, when it comes time to sell. It just it they don't feel like they're involved. They feel like you're against them. Management's against them. Like it's the professional guys, against, the guys doing all the work. And you see it all over social media. It's a perception that this generation has that management's bad. They're not on the same team. So I have to work really hard and I need to show up and I need to prove to them I'm on the same team with them. And you know how I do that? I'm in most of the trainings. I'm doing most of the trainings. Like I said, I don't need to. The managers are showing up too. We're there with them when they need us. We're not just in our pretty clean shirts, sitting in our offices on the phone. Like we'll go out in the field. We'll be there with the trainings. We actually know what we're doing. We can show them how to braze. Like we can get on the phone and I can call by call anyone in a diagnostic and be able to run them fully through that diagnostic. That builds trust with them. That builds a lot of trust to where they're like, okay, this person didn't have to spend all that time with me on the phone. They didn't need to help me. They didn't need to spend an hour of their day training me, and whatever they're needing help with. Because a lot of times these people need help. They just don't want to talk about it. Again, in this generation, they keep things to themselves because they don't trust people. So what I think I do really well is I'm good at understanding people and I'm good at getting people to open up. So I know what they're wanting and then I can design this company in a way to where we're all kind of moving in the same direction and they feel like they're part of that path of where we're moving. So it's not just a direction Derek wants to go, it's a direction the team wants to go. So am I still making the upper level decisions at the end of the day? Yes.
Sure.
But they are a big part of which direction we go. And I'm good at getting people to be real. Like if I've had people say, oh, I think we added plumbing too soon. And I said, oh, why do you think that? As a group, let's just throw it out there. Be real. He said, why waste each other's time? Let's just do it. That's what I'm a straight shooter. I don't play games. Why do you think we added plumbing too soon? Well, I know some customers had mentioned it. Okay, what did they say specifically? Well, oh, they said that, we were calling them for plumbing and we were just out there for HVAC. And I said, okay, well, let me do some research. So I looked into the calls. I got down with my customer service manager. We kind of listened to see what the customer had to say. And it was a misconception of what actually happened. It was just third-party information that the technician heard. I actually took them over and had them listen to the call and what really happened. And then I showed them all the happy customers and all the people that were super happy that we added plumbing, because there wasn't good plumbing companies in this area that we wanted to refer to. And because I didn't just bullshit them and sell them, I let them be part of the experience. They now are fully on board with it. And they're not that cancer that's behind the scenes in the real meeting in the parking lot with all the other techs talking shit, saying, "Oh no, those managers are full of shit. They're just trying to sell us what they want us to know." I'll give you the real info. I'll show you the numbers. Like, if you want to really know what's going on, come on over. I'll show you.
See, that also makes everybody show up in a fully transparent mindset. And by design, you are eliminating agendas that take a life of their own before they even exist in the first place. What's very interesting to me about all this, though, is that I think you're also winning in the recruiting game already at this point of your growth. You're not struggling in the recruiting game the same way other companies are. You probably don't even have you're probably I would guess, and if I'm wrong, let me know. I'll mail you a crispy fresh dollar bill. That you it's at least been 3, 4 months since you've ever had to rely on posting a job ad anymore.
So we get anywhere from 300 to 500 applications a week for various roles, and we keep some standard roles open just because I like to be prepared. People move, people retire. So do we need extra people, and are we understaffed, like I hear a lot of contractors say? No. Do we have a staffing plan in place? Yes, we do. And we have a full staffing operations employee. That's HR, that's recruiting. He does a little bit of training. And man, I love our recruiting system. We even have our own boot camp in-house. We have a full classroom in here. We'll train you from the ground up. We'll get you EPA
How
certified.
long is that process, onboarding from hire to running Cole solo in the truck?
4 weeks. 4 weeks to become a junior technician certified to run maintenance. They have the skills to do diagnostics, but we only put them on maintenances, and then they have a continued training plan to become a junior diagnostic tech. It's typically the technician route. We do the same thing with our project manager sales reps. They do not just get sales training. They have to pass the full boot camp. They're in there brazing. They're cutting ductwork. It's hilarious to see these sales reps that thought they just were going to sell, getting their hands dirty. And if they don't last, we love that. We will kick people out, and there will be 10 people in that boot camp. Maybe one will last, and that's okay with me. That means that the best of the best is coming on.
You
All of
got
our
to hang a
people here
bell
know
for
if
them
they
to
made it
ring.
through our onboarding process, this is someone that's solid, that they can rely on.
Yes.
This isn't someone that's lazy, that's just going to show up and get a paycheck. So this isn't
I like
someone
that.
that thinks they could just show up to a customer's home and quote them something right off the bat without doing a heat load calculation, without going in the attic, without actually checking things. So we're known for that in our area, that we don't play games. We do things the right way. That's actually our mission statement, is doing things the right way no matter what it takes.
Hell yeah. Do you you should put a bell where whoever quits boot camp should ring it on their way out. That would be hilarious
There'd
if
be
you
a
do
lot of
that.
rings. Yeah, we just had a boot camp, and we just within the first 3 days cut 4 people. And that's not to be
Incredible.
mean. It's just they're not ready yet. They can reapply, and
Sure.
we'll take them in. But just like military boot camp, like they don't, everyone doesn't make it, and that's okay.
Wow. All right. Talk to me about how aware and adept your management team is when it comes to numbers, data. Do you guys do a daily huddle? Walk me through that. How did you, through osmosis, not direct beating it over people's heads, but through the way that you just explained how you're leading every day, how your immediate next in line management staff, I know, I already know without you telling me, has a higher awareness and knowledge and understanding of numbers and KPIs and what it takes to win the day better than most companies that are out there. How did you get them there?
Wasn't easy, took time. And even myself, I don't come from a financial background. I didn't go to school for finance or business. So I was a cop. I was a field worker. So that's something that I struggled with originally. But I'm the type of person that doesn't give up and I can will continue to learn even now. Like, am I in a better place than originally? Of course, but I continue to just keep researching and reading books and doing shop visits and going to training courses. So in the beginning, it was tough though. Nexstar was, I think, a big part of what taught me those
Oh, yeah.
financials. And we do a daily huddle every day, 9 to 9:15. And this is not a huddle where we just report numbers and like talk about the numbers from yesterday and the numbers for today, because that's a waste of time. We could do that on ServiceTitan and pull reports. It is to plan and make real goals for the day that will move the numbers in the direction that we want. So when we go in there, it's based on obviously our yearly budget. We break it down to a monthly budget and then we break it down into a daily budget because sometimes a monthly budget's too big to plan for on a daily basis. So we bring it down into to win the day, like you just said. So each department goes over their numbers and then they go over the previous day's numbers of whether they why they hit it or why they didn't hit it. And they have to give us reasons why. They have to explore and figure out why we did not win the day. So they have to, so realistically, going over the numbers is a small part. It's the investigation part that we take more time in. And then when we talk about today, how do we win today? A lot of our time in that meeting is going over our turnover opportunities. Who's going on those calls? We use Dispatch Pro, we use AI, but still, we still talk about it. Who's going to those calls? What are those opportunities? And what is our plan? How many calls do we have for the day? Do we have enough technicians to run them? We need to call someone maybe that's off today to run those calls if we have a lot of high opportunities. We should not just be rescheduling those calls because that's what a lot of companies do. They're like, we have 30 calls, but we can only run 24. Let's reschedule them all. Well, you're going to probably lose six of those calls if those are down AC systems. People aren't waiting for you. They're going to get another company. So if I have the opportunities today, I better figure out a way to run those. I better not waste those opportunities because tomorrow I might not have those opportunities. And that's where I see people fail. They think this is like a 9 to 5 job where you can just predict this stuff and you can, make it. When the opportunity is there, you need to capitalize on it. So that's what we do in that daily huddle. We hyper focus on what opportunities do we need? How do we capitalize on them? And what's going to be the plan? And it's very in sync. We do not use that daily huddle meeting to talk about issues or high level issues. We do an L10 meeting biweekly. It's about 2 hours where all the managers sit there and talk about high level issues. And then all the other managers come in and they give ideas on how to fix the situation. And you do not let them talk about an issue that they have already solved. That's worthless. I only let them talk about issues that they have not solved yet so that we can get constructive feedback. And then we leave that meeting with a plan. So the daily huddle is a big part of winning the day. We also do a monthly financial meeting where all the managers get together. We do an internal financial meeting where we go over our P&L. We go over some of the key metrics. We're looking at gross margins first because my managers are in control of gross margins. My accounting manager and me are more focused on the overhead, but we're looking at direct labor. We're looking at OT. We're looking at material costs. We're looking at commissions. We're looking at financing fees. So we need to see if those are within our metrics and our benchmarks of what we set in our BPW. If those are outside of the metric, we need to investigate and find out why. If your budgeted revenue is you didn't hit your budget for the month and you're way lower, it could just be that your revenue wasn't you didn't hit your revenue, or you could be overspending, or maybe they're
You got to
selling
diagnose your operations,
correct, or
everything.
maybe they're selling a dealer fee, a 25 months no interest for 10.85% dealer fee, and you only budgeted 6% dealer fee in your pricing. So I think that's where people go wrong. It's like you win in the summer and then you expect to lose in the winter and then it evens out. That's not good business operations. I need to be profitable every single month. And then in the summertime, yeah, I'm going to be extra profitable, but I'm going to be profitable no matter what month it is. So those financial meetings, we hold each other accountable. We will make each manager responsible for giving us those answers right then and there in that meeting. Then the next day, we sit with our Nexstar coach on a Zoom meeting, and we give him our profit and loss. We go over our BPW, and he tells us what's up. Some people want a nice coach that pats them on the back. I don't want that. That's a waste of my time. I don't need your kudos. I want you to tell me where I'm messing up so I can fix it. I don't even care if we doubled our revenue goal. You still need to give me some constructive feedback because I'm only looking to grow and to win. So in that meeting, he'll challenge us. Hey, your conversion rate was supposed to be 45% in HVAC service. You were 30. I don't care that you hit your revenue goal. You didn't win in HVAC service. Why was that?
I
And
love
I need to
it.
have real answers. I need to say, okay,
Because
well,
they'll call you out if you BS them on the answer too. That's what I
they
love.
will. They will. They're smart. And I need to be like, okay, well, we had a lot of turnovers. Okay, well, let me look at that and make sure that's actually accurate. So, that's what leads you to the getting the revenue that you need. It's those KPIs. It's the conversion rate. It's the average sale. It's how many opportunities are you on? What was the turnover rate? What was the close rate on that opportunity? What was the average sale on that for the efficiency? This is something that I think a lot of contractors get wrong. They're only focusing on efficiency. If you pay your people per hour, you have a service tech out there running a 10-hour day, and you're paying them for drive time, that should be considered in your efficiency. If you're only pulling a report on ServiceTitan of the efficiency on the call, and that's what you're factoring for your efficiency, that technician's paid for the whole day, whether it's picking up stuff at the shop, training. I personally would factor in how much they sold for how many hours they're getting paid, so you can have an accurate billable hour efficiency. So I think sometimes contractors don't dive down deep enough into those numbers
No.
to figure that out.
Where the setup for failure originates in that is everybody's spending so much money on so many different technologies and tools and the sales training and everything else, and their chart of accounts on their financials is a dumpster fire. There's one GL in the COGS that says materials, which has equipment in it too, by the way. Direct labor is below the line. And if direct labor is above the line, the indirects, the cost of labor, your benefits, your workman's comp, your 401k, none of that is above the line. So, no, that's okay. So, that's the beauty of the BPW workshop because you also have the profit pricing tool. And it is a monster to fill out, but it's a great educational tool to use because. Can you do it on one sheet in a spreadsheet? Yes, absolutely. But you're going to go through 25 plus tabs, buddy, and you're going to learn everything, the good, the bad, the ugly. And ultimately, like this is how I believe it beautifully ties up, is that every single human action that is willingly committed or influenced through culture and leadership has a direct impact in a black and white outcome on your financials, which the one stop they make before they hit your financials is going to be your operating KPIs. And so, could not agree more. So, what I took away from that is where most people give up in trying to upgrade, uplift, and educate their frontline managers and their senior leadership group. You seem like a very stubborn SOB, Derek. So you did
I
not
am.
give up and you stayed consistent and now it's paying you back. And now going into the future, bringing on new leaders, new technicians, developing them into leaders, the effort's not 100% on you anymore. There's so much to unpack from this episode. There are so many immediate impact action items and takeaways people can have. And Derek, I believe it's people like you that should be given the spotlight in this industry because you are more relatable than any than the majority sample of success that's out there. You're already successful, but you're on your way onto something very, very special. And I think a lot of that has to do with your determination, your willpower, how you treat people, the culture that you've built. And it's been a treat having you on the show. How can people find you so they can look you up on social media, connect with you, and laugh their asses off when they watch your videos?
Yeah. So yeah, my social media handles are just at the Derek Cormier, and you can find me on TikTok, Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn for a more professional setting. But yeah, feel free to hit me up.
You don't have the Cobra sunglasses on your
Yeah, no, I don't
LinkedIn?
have those on there, but I should. Yeah.
I think you should, man. It's the
Yeah.
brand, dude, at this point.
For real. But no, I appreciate you having me. Obviously, you're a wealth of knowledge, and just like you said, it's rare to meet, a business owner in the home services that kind of, again, how you talked about it, I think it's rare to find somebody that knows what they're doing on the other side, especially with coaching. You only typically find these large organizations like Nexstar, which kind of block you out if the area is already taken. Like if
Yeah.
you're in my area and you want Nexstar, you can't have it. So, realistically, there's not a lot of great coaching organizations out there for people of, smaller sizes or that can't get in. So, I mean, with all your experience and knowledge, obviously just talking to you, and you're not in with the guys type of guy, which either am
Right.
I mean, I would definitely recommend you to any contractor that needs
That's
help.
high praise, man. I appreciate that. It really, really means a lot. The one of the core thesis philosophies of Service Crucible is service first, revenue second. And I think that's what you've done with your company is you're making people lead with the right foot forward, and all good things come in due time. And now you're cashing in, and you're going to continue to cash in. I really appreciate that, man. Again, thanks so much for being on the show. Can't wait to reconnect again at a future date.
Same. Appreciate it, Norse.